On the phone for that conversation is Brenda Wineapple. She is the author of a number of books. Her latest, The Impeachers, The Trial of Andrew Johnson, and The Dream of a Just Nation. Brenda Wineapple, I know you've been in very big demand, especially during this trial and impeachment. And so the fact that you're willing to come back and join us again means a great deal to me. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I very much admire what you've been doing and what you've been able to do and the focus that you put on this entire trial and the fact that you have sort of a historic, you're interested in the history of impeachment, too. So it's my pleasure. Thanks.
I really am. And I've been going through your book very slowly as to what point we are in this trial. I'll go to your book and I'll read those portions, right? Okay. To sort of get announced. And I'm going to ask you a little bit later about the KKK. I was really struck about what was happening during the trial and the KKK. Yeah. But before we get there, I do want to ask you about Samuel P. Chase and his breaking. Now, my understanding is there were three times that there were ties. The first two times, he actually inserted himself to break the tie, but the third time, he did not. What should we know about all this?
Well, what's interesting about Salmon Chase, and this is very unlike John Roberts, Salmon Chase is a very political person who had held lots of different positions in the government. He was in Lincoln's cabinet as Treasury Secretary. He'd run against Lincoln in 1860, hoping to be elected. He was part, evidently, of a covert scheme to unseat Lincoln and run again in 1864.
Oh,
he had
really?
Been Ohio governor. Uh-huh. So he came with what we would say today is a bit of baggage, but he was very well-respected, and having said all that, it seems kind of shocking in a way, perhaps, he was also a very staunch, principled abolitionist who found slavery appalling and fought before and during and after the war for equal rights for all people, regardless of race, creed, condition of servitude, private condition of servitude. So he's a very complicated person. But the interesting thing beyond what I've said, as if that weren't enough, when Salmon Chase was put on the Supreme Court by Lincoln because Lincoln felt that he would protect civil rights, Salmon Chase still wanted to be president. Now, we don't think that Judge John Roberts wants to be president. We assume, I think rightly, that he is content with his position on the bench. It's very unusual to have someone on the bench known for their political ambitions, because we like to think that the Supreme Court is above partisan politics. Of course it's not, but nonetheless. So it's interesting. So Salmon Chase, at presiding over the impeachment trial of Andrew Johnson, he had skin in the game, to put it mildly. And so when he cast tie-breaking votes in the first case, when the impeachers, the radical Republicans, wanted a swift trial, a speedy trial, and those protecting Johnson wanted it to go on because they figured they'd have better shot at acquittal, Chase cast the deciding vote in favor of the president's defense because he did not want Johnson removed from office. As I said, he had something to gain from Johnson staying in office.
That's interesting. And then my understanding is the first two times there was a tie, there were three times altogether there were ties. The first two times he did break the tie, but he didn't do it a third time. Was that because it was controversial by that point that he had already done it?
I think it was by that time that he had exercised his power enough. Maybe he knew more of what was going on behind the scenes, because there were all kinds of allegations. Hard to know whether these rumors are true or not, but that he was consorting with those moderates who were starting to think about acquitting Andrew Johnson, and there was talk that he and they thought of perhaps perhaps forming a new party, one which was not the Democrats and it was not the Republicans, but it was something else. And eventually that party was formed. It was called the Liberal Republicans, but that was after Chase had passed away. So there were reasons that he probably backed off the third time, but he had really made his feelings known, and everyone knew, and he was on record as saying he was against the impeachment of Johnson. He didn't like the radical Republicans, even though he had been very radical himself and was still in terms of equal rights. And he certainly didn't want the next in line, a man from Ohio, as Chase was, to step into the White House. And that, so complicated.
Do you get the sense that Solomon, I said Samuel, I was wrong, Solomon P. Chase, do you get the sense that he was asserting himself much more than we'd see in the next two Senate impeachment trials with William Rehnquist in 99 and then now, of course, with John Roberts?
Yes, absolutely. With Rehnquist, although yesterday my understanding is that Justice Roberts did prevent a question by Senator Rand Paul.
Today, I don't know if you got a chance to see it today. Rand Paul got the question to Justice Roberts, and he read it and he refused to answer. He refused to read it. He read it to himself, but he did not do it. He did not verbally read it.
Right. So in that sense, that is assuming an interventionist role. But you know, from one point of view, it is. But from my point of view, it's following the law. There is a whistleblower law that was, I understand, bipartisan, and that protects the identity of whistleblowers. And in this particular case, Justice Roberts isn't going to himself break the law. I mean, that would be rather shocking, it seems to me. So it's interventionist, but at the same time, it's upholding the rule of law. It doesn't seem, anything can be argued that it's partisan, but it doesn't seem to me to be in that sense. I'm sure Rand Paul wasn't happy.
No.
But the real question, I think, where we're all headed is, what will Justice Roberts do if it's a tie vote, 50-50? And that is really the question. And it's a complicated one, because from one point of view, you can argue, well, he's not a member of the Senate, so he really shouldn't have a vote. That was the argument against Salmon Chase. By the same token, the Constitution on the other side says the Chief Justice may, you know, has to preside. And what does preside mean in this case? But to, you know, to break a tie. So I don't know. I suppose those watchers of the Supreme Court would have a better sense. I've understood Justice Roberts to be fair, but certainly not necessarily, as I said, an interventionist.
Do you have any sense, and I don't know if this is a fair question to ask you or not, but do you have any sense why Mike Pence wouldn't be the tie-breaking vote? I mean, there's nowhere that says that it okay, let me know.
I do.
Good.
I heard your introduction, sure. He's not a member of the Senate. I mean, if you can argue that Justice Roberts can't vote because he's not a member of the Senate, even though he is de facto now, the Vice President Pence has no role in the Senate to play whatsoever.
But he's the president of the Senate.
Right? Yeah, but he's the president of the Senate when it's conceived of as a legislative body. Right now, it's not a legislative body. It's a court of impeachment. Huh. And that may seem a distinction without a difference, but I think it's an important difference because, as we know, the Senate isn't passing legislation right now. It is sitting as a court. It's hearing what evidence there is. It's answering questions. It's debating. That's not legislative. That's a court of impeachment, and Pence has no role in it.
Okay, thank you for that. Actually,
but anything could happen. Having said that, having given my own judicious answer, anything could happen at this point. I mean, nothing would surprise me.
Yeah, right. I mean, the Senate, if it decided it wanted to have Mike Pence break a tie-breaking vote, it could do so because Senate has
But wouldn't they have to vote for that? And I'm not sure that they would get the votes that they need for the 51 that they need for that, because I would think there would some Republicans well, what do I know? Would say no.
We don't know what they would do anymore, except other than say no. I thought that was a good explanation. Important to know that this isn't the Senate right now is not a legislative body. It's almost like a judicial body at this point.
Exactly. And then it raises certain questions. Is it supposed to be like a court of law or a court of impeachment? If it's a court of law, there are different rules for evidence. If it's a court of impeachment, you presumably don't have to prove beyond reasonable doubt. You just have a preponderance of evidence. You know, so it goes back and forth. They haven't really argued that because they haven't needed to, except in the matter of witnesses and court of law would, of course, have witnesses.
Live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald Trump on KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, 90.7 FM KPFK in Los Angeles. I'm Mitch Jezerich. We are in the middle, or probably towards the end, but who knows? Oftentimes these breaks last longer than the Senate announces, but we are in what's supposed to be a 20-minute break. In a moment, we expect the trial to resume and return to the final day of questions from senators. On the phone joining us is Brenda Wineapple, author of several books. Her latest is called The Impeachers, The Trial of Andrew Johnson, and The Dream of a Just Nation. I do want to see if I could squeeze in a couple of more things here, Brenda. We're going to do the best we can before they come back. One being the witnesses in that 1868 trial, how many they had. And then again, the other. I mean, I was really struck when I was reading about the trial and what the KKK was up to, a very nascent KKK at that time. First, I just want to point out, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but Johnson's trial went 10 weeks and they had 40 witnesses, didn't they?
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact count, but there were quite a number of witnesses, and it did go 10 weeks. It didn't help the impeachers to go that long. You know, the defense team was right. A lengthy trial was not going to be in anyone's interest. But, you know, what's interesting is also the fact that this was an election year, and partly while the trial was going on, senators had to leave at a certain point and suspend the trial because they went to the Republican National at the same time. So that is really some kind of interesting parallel, because we're in the same situation almost. It's about the same distance between now and the election as it was in 1868.
Yeah. All right.
And there were a lot of witnesses. You're absolutely right.
Just saw Mitch McConnell go back into the Senate floor. So I don't know. They haven't begun. So I do want to. But
we'll still get to the Klan.
Well, I got to tell you, and this may even be a very unfair comparison. So I just want to say that outright. But I want to tell you the experience that I had when I was reading about the Klan in the 1868 impeachment trial of Andrew Johnson. As I'm reading about the Klan and the death threats that they were sending to members of Congress during this trial, I'm actually watching Sean Hannity the other night, really in overdrive, warning Republicans from voting for witnesses. Now, again, it's not a fair comparison, but it just sort of made it, you know, but I couldn't help but like be struck by it, about the pressure concerning the impeachment trial. Tell me about the Klan in 1868 and the impeachment trial of Andrew Johnson.
Well, there had been a lot of violence in the South, particularly against black men and women, and some whites, too, who were on the side of civil rights. And militias, sort of, I guess you would call them night riders, really militias were forming, and there were reports in northern papers, and the Southerners, of course, knew about this, and it became something of an issue in the trial, where one of the managers named Ben Butler brought up the fact that really what we need to do is remove Andrew Johnson for his race baiting, his white supremacy, and his inciting of violence, which is going on right now. And the opposition basically said, no, you're just you know, you're just being hyperbolic. It's exaggerated. These things aren't really happening. And the tragedy is that they were happening, and they continue to happen. And while Johnson stayed in office until Grant took over and then put some teeth in anti-Klan action and legislation. But this was forming, and this was an outgrowth, this being the Klan, an outgrowth of Johnson's policies and his acceptance of a kind of violence and a kind of real slaughter against people whom he considered horribly, but considered lesser than he. I was just really, it's a really sad state of affairs, tragic state of affairs that those who wanted Johnson out of office really sought to rectify.
Yeah.
And they made this public, and they made this public. It's important to know that they were on, they saw what was happening and they called it out for what it was.
Yeah, and it was brought up in the trial, too, was it not?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Ben Butler brought it up, and they said, oh, you're just being, you know, you're just trying to incite people. You're just going too far. This is not decorous to bring this up. And he was really exercised. He was really upset by this, as were many other people. But, you know, and you see this today, people can choose what they want to hear. It's kind of astonishing, and they didn't want to hear that. They wanted to dismiss these acts of violence as propaganda because they had a goal in mind, and the goal was keep Johnson in office.
Brenda Wineapple is the author of the book, The Impeachers, The Trial of Andrew Johnson and the Dream of a Just Nation. Brenda Wineapple, I thank you for that. I really wanted to have that conversation with you today. So thank you for your willingness to do it on such short notice.
Thank you.
All right, the very best to you.